Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Coffee and Football, presented by Texas Electricity Ratings. I'm your host, Blake Monroe, where I'm joined each and every morning by Bobby Burton and Jerry Hamilton. Guys, tell us where you're checking in from, what you're drinking, get your questions in. We are 81 days away from kickoff, so that number slowly winding down, and we've been starting with recruiting, but today, Bobby, let's start with some team notes. You posted some good stuff over on OnTexasFootball.com.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been about a week since they got back after it. And so I did some checking over the last 4 or 5 days and kind of compiled some news and notes. A lot of people have asked about Silas Bolden. We knew that he was performing well early, but what I got yesterday was a little bit different. It wasn't only that he's performing well and that he's both quick and fast, which is an important aspect, right, Jerry? He's not just a quick guy that can get.
We knew he was going to show up quick and fast like he was on tape at Oregon State, right?
Right. It's not just that he's a water bug and can move around and shake people. He's actually got some long speed to him as well, which is interesting, and I don't think necessarily appreciated. But the bigger piece that we found out and what we're hearing is, second, he's a hard worker. So he didn't come in and fluff the first week of workouts, right? And then the last piece, and this was really interesting, Jerry and Blake, to me, he adds a little bit of leadership to the wide receiver room that may be in need of some. And I say that because, look, Isaiah Bond's only a junior. Matthew Golden's only a junior. Jonte Cook's in his first year probably playing. Ryan Wingo's true freshman. He is, for lack of a better term, based on what I'm hearing, he could end up being the adult in the room at receiver very quickly. So it's not just how he's playing or the quick and fast aspect of him, but he adds a little something else to him as well. The other thing that I heard that I thought, and I've got a whole list of notes on Texas football, can't necessarily go over each and every one of them. The other thing, Jerry, that I heard, and love your comment on this as well, Blake, I'm hearing that Jermaine Lole came in ready to go. And he and Bill Norton, the other defensive tackle from Arizona, as well as Alfred Collins, may be your top three defensive tackles next year.
Well, look.
And Norton, the thing about Norton, Jerry, before you go in, they underappreciated his true size. They thought, you know, he's a big guy, yada, yada, but he is all of 6'5", 320.
Yeah.
And so they underappreciated his size. And they underappreciated Lole's quickness, apparently. So
yeah, I mean, look, for me, Lole's so interesting. And I think this is the way Oklahoma viewed him when he was committed there. And then Texas, after Texas ripped him from Oklahoma. I'm just trying to get the chat going with that one. All right, so look, before his injuries, he was considered a top 2-3 round draft pick after his sophomore year at Arizona State. I mean, Herm Edwards and Antonio Pierce recruited him. They know a little bit something about NFL defensive players, right? And before the injuries that cost him a couple of seasons, it's just built up to where he missed a year and a half, 2 years. My thing with Lole is, one, please no play wrestling in the locker room with this guy. Let everybody else do that crap. But here's the thing. If this guy builds off of last year, he played, 400 snaps coming off the injuries and was mildly productive, right? Wasn't the same player. He's not going to be the same player as a sophomore. You had 77 tackles and 6.5 sacks. That's how you jump up on NFL draft boards year two of college football. But if he can give Texas 40 tackles and 4 sacks, that's a huge, huge season for Texas. So if he can build off of last year, stay healthy, which has been his biggest fight, and build off of that last season returning back to the field with more confidence in his ability to still do this at a high level, which that wanes when you go through the injury issues he did. He becomes a steal for Texas. He's a talented guy now. There's no doubt. He's got to stay healthy and keep it together for 13 more games.
Yeah, that was the other one, those two. And then another one I thought that was kind of interesting, Jerry, and I'd love to get your take on this as well, is I was told that of the freshmen, of the young offensive linemen, Jaden Chapman and Brandon Baker both, their athleticism is starting to shine. Not just their physiques, but actual athleticism. And so while the top, look, they've got the top five or seven set right now. I don't think Brandon Baker and Jaden Chapman are necessarily pushing those guys this year, but it could be meaningful for the years to come, right? And I hear those two guys have looked really good along with Trevor Goosby, which we've talked about previously. That's very, very interesting to me. And in total, Texas, look, the great thing about this is that I'm hearing more and more about depth. Another player they talked about was Andrew Makuba. I mean, look, Andrew Makuba started 3 years at Clemson. There's a reason he started 3 years at Clemson. Texas returns two starters at safety, effectively, Michael Taff and Derek Williams. Well, I'm being told that Andrew Makuba the thing with Andrew Makuba versus everybody else on the team is that he plays at a high level consistently at safety. Like, you ain't – now, Michael Taff, very consistent. Derek Williams, pretty consistent, high-end player. Andrew Makuba is, like, ultra-consistent at a high level on average. So – it's going to be hard to keep him out of the starting lineup.
Yeah, I mean, this is what I'll say on Makuba, and y'all know I like to have fun with Dabo in the portal. By the way, he was great on Jeopardy. Here's the thing, that he started on a team at Clemson that was still one of the top teams in college football. They may not be the national championship contender they were, because Dabo just is not adapting as well, and quarterback play's falling off, and speed at receiver's not there, but. Makuba started on a team with multiple NFL players on it. So he came into Clemson and broke through as a guy that the Clemson staff said, this guy's a future NFL player. Because that's about all Clemson starts on their defense. That's the one thing about Clemson. They still have a ton of future NFL talent on defense. And Makuba was on a team that had multiple D-line draft picks, linebackers, secondary guys. So I think he's a little underrated to Texas fans right now, and maybe ourselves a little bit when he came over. But the more you kind of study him and study what he did at Clemson, the more you realize this guy's going to be a major upgrade for the Longhorns.
I'm good with it. I'm good with him. I think that plus Javion Cole – gives Texas two older players that have starting experience. That's where I lean into that.
I want to add to you on the OL stuff. Yeah, I've heard that maybe the three best athletes on the offensive line at Texas are DJ Campbell, Jaden Chapman, and Brandon Baker. And I also told Nate Kibble looks amazing physically. Came in great shape. Not good, but great shape.
That's good. That's good to hear. I mean, look. We talked a little bit both sides. That's where a lot of games are won and lost, offensive line, defensive line. You can talk about the guys out there, you know, throwing bombs and catching them and all that other stuff, but the big uglies are what bring it home half the time, at least.
Well, speaking of the big uglies, guys, Jerry actually brought this to my attention yesterday, but PFF was talking about SEC defensive tackles returning, and Alfred Collins is first among returning SEC defensive tackles. He has a career-high 80.6 pass rush grade this past season.
Yeah, I mean, look, that I don't think that is a surprise. I mean, look, Alfred Collins has top three-round ability. He actually has first-round talent, naturally. Just the athleticism, length, frame, all of that. The key for Alfred's always been the consistency. And is he going to end up elevating and ascending to the player that he can be? I think this year's just massive for him in that regard. I just think some guys mature later, and I'm talking maybe it's football maturity. Maybe it's just the maturity of, okay, what do you want to do? What do you want this football thing to be in your life? Some guys don't mature as early, but I think Alfred's going to have a really good year, and I'm not going to put on the shades if Tetapari wins here. He's probably vacationing in Mallorca or something right now. But I'm not putting on the shades until the season, but I do think Alfred is going to have a really good season. And I think, look, Kenny Baker's strength is as a pass rush coach Bobby, and he's really good against the run, but a pass rush coach, I expect to see Alfred take even a next step as a pass rusher this year. The question I have, how much more aggressive in the front are they going to be? If Texas is more aggressive with their front, Bobby, Alfred, he may put up 5, 6, 7 sacks this year. It's not out of the question.
Yeah, I would add this, Blake and Jerry, that graphic that we showed on the screen there here on the YouTube channel or on Twitter, that it said pass rush, right, not overall defensive tackle.
Right.
It's pass rush. I think everybody that has watched Alfred Collins since that play against Colorado in the Alamo Bowl when he was a true freshman knows what he could be from a pass rush guy, right? I mean, everybody feels that. It's been, what about his overall play, right? And so, Jerry, I hear you. I think that he's got that high-level ability as a pass rusher. My concern with him and Vernon Broughton both has been how they can handle standing up against the defense or against the offensive lineman of the SEC run blocking. You know, that's been my entire concern. I do think that he's a good pass rusher and can be a great one. He needs to be able to do more against the run on a consistent level.
That's going to be what I'm watching this year with Texas.
Yeah, the Nansen.
Because they have a front that strength is going to be being more aggressive with the blitz packages. That is where this front for Texas is going to be maximized. Yeah, I really think if you say, okay, well, how are these guys going to be able to magically, is Vernon Broughton magically going to be able to anchor against the run? The answer is no. That's not what he is. I think Alfred Collins can be okay at that, but I think Bill Norton has his place as an A-gap player. Now, he played as much over the Bs as the As, and Texas doesn't always play the A-gap. You know, they don't play an A-gap over the ball player as much as I think we think or talk about, but this defensive front is built to play in the other team's backfield. So how are they going to maximize that? Because that's how this defensive line is going to be maximized this year.
Bobby is doing something, so we'll move on.
Let's move on to some recruiting.
Yeah, we definitely need to talk about recruiting. Obviously, a lot going on, but before we get to that, Jerry, I want to read this super chat here from Jerry's Jack Links. Thank you, Jerry's Jack Links. He says, I'm pretty sure CJ made it into one of Javion Hilson's Instagram photos while he was at the airport. Go check it out. But I think you were in that photo too. Am I correct?
Yeah, if you saw some gray hairs on the side, that was probably me. Yeah. Yeah, I think I was as well. But yeah, Javion Hilson, that was he's a fun interview. I'll say that. The Florida kids generally are, man. They speak their mind. They're not really worried about what people say. Think about what they say. That's why they're so much fun to cover. And Javion Hilson is certainly that guy. And again, my biggest takeaway from the Javion Hilson visit, what we heard behind the scenes, to me, kind of secondary to when I walked up to his mom at the airport and I said, how was the visit? I want him to come here. I want Javion to go to Texas, but he has FSU in Texas. I was like, okay, I'll put that in the back of the memory bank. I did post that on texasfootball.com when she said it, but I'm putting that one in the back of the memory bank, doing this for years and seeing if that ends up being a difference maker, if that kid were to flip from FSU to Texas. And we'll see. FSU has that huge weekend, June 21st through 23rd. He will be there. Kevin Wynn will be there. Myron Charles will be there. Hell, Kenny Baker may as well be there. But he has a couple of visitors in Austin instead. But that's going to be interesting. If, for those that think, Javion Hilson's committed to Florida State, maybe he probably won't flip. He already flipped from Bama to FSU once. So there's a precedent here. So we'll see what happens.
Before we get into recruiting fully, though, Jerry, I'm going to let Bobby tell folks out there about Texas electricity ratings.
Yeah, absolutely. For those of y'all still living in the great state of Texas and in the major cities with deregulated electricity like Dallas and Houston, you understand that the deregulated electricity market can be confusing. Texas Electricity Ratings is a shopping website that lets you compare prices, read customer reviews, and find a good electricity plan that fits your needs. It also filters out a lot of the gimmicky plans on websites like Power to Choose that trick customers into expensive bills. So if you're in the market for a new electricity plan, shop TexasElectricityRatings.com/OTF for all of your electricity needs. Hook'em from the folks at TexasElectricityRatings.com.
And I wanted to say,
I've got to say this real quick, Blake, if you don't mind. I think I just saw somebody in the chat here on the YouTube thing from the great state, or from the great city of Nakona, the old deep place. So I thought that's the first time I've seen Nakona show up on the screen.
I need to go to Nakona. I got a Nakona glove that needs to be repaired that the dog got a hold of. But with that said, all right, Jerry, now let's do a little deep dive into recruiting. Big weekend, big couple of weeks coming up.
Yeah, so four-star corner Dejon Lee should be making his way to campus. That's very much a long shot. But, you know, look, that's recruiting, right? If you don't take the shot, you never know what's going to happen, right? But Dejon Lee from Mission Viejo, he should be on campus for a two-day visit. He goes to Georgia, then A&M, then Alabama. So, you know, if you're on the West Coast, I mean, the question there is, can you keep him from going to the SEC? Obviously, Georgia and Bama have been recruiting him the longest, but Texas taking their swing, and we'll see what happens. I think there's a lot of ground to be made up. But let's get more into this weekend's official visitors. I think our great producer, Matthew, made a pretty cool graphic here. So June 14th through 16th, and I want to bring this out and say it could change by a couple of guys. A couple of guys could be added. Somebody could cancel. That's just leading up to Friday. But DeCorian Moore, obviously the headliner this weekend, the five-star receiver out of Duncanville. There you see all gas, no brakes commits there. Ricky Stewart, Brandon Brown, Lance Jackson, a huge official visit weekend for Texas and Brandon Brown. There you see the list of official visitors, if we could keep that up while I talk on about this. Look, DeCorian Moore, he visited Ohio State, he visited LSU, he's got Texas. I think he'll decide in late July, early August as far as an announcement. Andrew Marsh, I think, is behind other guys. Lance Jackson's one of the top edges in the country. Smith Arogbo, I know there's a lot of hype about Texas Tech coming off the visit. He still has Texas. He has Oklahoma. Parents don't care about football. It's all about academics. Smith cares very much about football. So it's an interesting recruitment. Riley Pettijohn, one of the best linebackers in the country, was at USC last weekend. Tristan Castro, USC commit. We'll see if he steps on the plane. Total wild card. Daylon McCutcheon, maybe the smoothest route runner, but probably behind some other guys. Brandon Brown, huge weekend for Texas there. LSU, obviously, Bo Davis, that longstanding relationship. Bo believed in him when other people said he was too small, which is asinine, by the way. Kevin Wynn is one of the more intriguing recruitments for me because, look, he wants to be a chef. He's a small-town guy, Greensboro, Georgia. He was at Georgia on May 31st through June 2nd. They're now pushing hard now that Texas is making a run. That's just a reality. He's a really good player that Georgia's just loaded with D linemen. If I was Kirby Smart, I'd have a tough time making decisions on D linemen in Georgia. I mean, there's so many. And if you move early on a guy, you might miss the better guy late. It's wild how many D linemen there are in Georgia. So Kevin Wynn, really good. He was at South Carolina last weekend, Texas this weekend, then FSU 21st through 23rd. The interesting thing about Kevin Wynn's recruitment, he's never been to Austin. So I really think this will come down to a couple of things. What is Texas show? I think the football stuff with him is it matters to sit in the team room or meeting room with Kenny Baker and talk to Sark and PK and Nansen. I'm not saying it doesn't matter. It matters. But the city of Austin, being a small town, Greensboro, Georgia guy, versus the other places he's visiting, Athens, Columbia, Tallahassee. There's a difference between those places and Austin, Texas. How does he react to that? And what does Texas do from that culinary, want to be a chef side within the city of Austin to really show him how great that could be for him? Because I'm telling you, that really matters with this kid's recruitment. I think he can make a decision based on that as much as football. And that doesn't mean he doesn't want to be an NFL football player, because he does. But when I went to meet up with him at the sexual track meet and spend time with him, it was very apparent how much that does mean to him in this recruitment. I mean, he talks about his favorite things to cook. I mean, he's a real guy that wants to be a chef now. So this is going to matter in that recruitment. Marco Jones, total wild card out of California. Kelshawn Johnson, I spoke with him last night. I know there's a lot of A&M chatter coming off the visit. Sark tried to call him Sunday. He missed a call. He was, after he got back from a visit, he was working out. him and Sark are supposed to connect. So do you think Texas might still want him? I mean, Sark tried to call him Sunday. I probably heard all the same chatter coming off the A&M visit. But he still says he's visiting Texas this weekend and USC the following weekend. So these recruitments are going to play out. Crystal balls, leans, all this stuff. That's coming from our side, what other people report, you know, with various kids. But these visits continue. Nick Brooks. Watch out for Nick Brooks. I'm going to save him for later. Maybe after this, we'll play his huddle. Lamont Rogers, mom, I think, is everything in this recruitment. A&M did a good job getting his father on campus, who lives in Vicksburg, Mississippi. But I think if whatever corner mom is in is going to be big on this one. John Mills, I think, is a Texas lean over Washington. But Washington has all the family members that played there. He was at Florida last weekend. This is his last visit. I think we'll see John do something soon. Jonathan Cunningham, total wild card. Who does Texas push for with Madden Faramo coming in next weekend, the linebacker from San Juan Capistrano, who I think is an absolute stud. So, Blake, if you're ready, let's play the Nick Brooks huddle, and I'll talk about Nick Brooks a little bit because I talked with him yesterday. It was an interesting conversation.
All right. Let me bring it up here and take it away.
All right, this is Big Nick Brooks if you search him out on Huddle. A bit, and when we say big, 6'7", 345, 350. So he visited Georgia May 31st through the 2nd, June 2nd, and that's been considered the favorite for him for a while. He was at USC last week, and he comes to Texas this weekend. This is such an interesting recruitment because, you know, Kyle Flood kind of slipped in there in January and went to see the kid, and then, you know, you start following him. You talk to Nick, and oh, wow, Texas is in this thing, and he's coming to the spring game. Now the question is, can Texas beat Georgia on Nick Brooks? And I don't think it's out of the question. I'm not sitting here saying Texas is going to get him. That official visit hasn't taken place yet. But what I will say is this was once a slam dunk for Georgia. It's definitely not anymore. Georgia signed 11 offensive linemen in the last two classes. And think back, and that doesn't mean Nick Brooks is scared of competition. That just means he's looking at things like, okay, you know, they signed six tackles in the last two classes. So these things matter. It's not about being scared of competition. It's about looking out at the best situation for yourself. And, you know, we'll see what happens there. But he really liked his visit to Austin for the spring game. That was the first time he'd been on campus. And I think Kyle Flood's done a very good job in this recruitment. I think Texas has a legit shot here for an offensive lineman out of Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Raise your hand if you ever thought we'd be saying that.
No, I'll raise my hand on that. Texas and Cedar Rapids, not one that we would think of immediately, Jerry. That's for sure. But
and what Livin' Rip Free said here, I think Nick Brooks, Fasusi, Lamont Rogers, I think Texas could get two of those guys. Odds are in recruiting, you probably get one of the three, but not out of question Texas gets two out of three. And I don't think it's out of the question they take six lineman in this class. I still if John Mills jumps in.
Yeah, I'm interested here, Jerry. I'm just looking at the list. I mean, I'm going position by position of guys coming in, right? Ricky Stewart at running back. He's already committed. Then you have at wide receiver, DeCorian Moore out of Duncanville. Dalen McCutcheon out of Lovejoy. Andrew Marsh out of the Houston area. Kelshawn Johnson out of Hitchcock. At O-line, you have Nick Brooks out of Cedar Rapids. Lamont Rogers out of the Dallas area, John Mills out of the San Francisco area. Then you have defensive line. You have Kevin Wynn out of Georgia, Marco Jones, a defensive end out of Southern California, San Ramon area. Linebacker, two guys from the Dallas area, Jonathan Cunningham, Riley Pettijohn, both coming in. And I forgot Brandon Brown also coming in as well, a defensive line. He's out of Florida. And then cornerback, you have another Californian, Tristan Castro, coming in, who's, as you mentioned, committed currently to USC. Dijon Lee, apparently on his way to Texas right now. He's also out of California. So it feels to me like a very national flavor to this recruiting weekend or this recruiting week. There are five or six, I guess, seven in-state guys, and the rest are out of state. And they're from a variety of places, Georgia, Florida, California, Iowa. You know, what do you say?
This is what Texas fans have wanted for a long time. They wanted to be a national recruiting program. And now it's stomaching the month of June and getting through it every year because These are real. Be careful what you wish for in recruiting, but these are real battles. When you go into these states and you go into these areas, it should be a battle. I mean, you want to, if Josiah Sharma is Alabama, Oregon, and Texas, that's the battle you want to be in. If Myron Charles out of Port Charlotte, you're the only school getting an official visit out of state, that's the battle you want to be in, right? I mean, okay, wow. That means Texas is resonating with kids out of a Port Charlotte, Florida, defensive lineman that visited Florida, Texas, Miami, and FSU. That's a good place to be. And by the way, Sark needs to recruit 20 guys from Florida so I can go out there and see more guys.
Jerry, looking at it from a personal standpoint there. Look, my thing about recruiting right now, Jerry, is actually I'm intrigued a little bit about what you're hearing 2 days later, 48 hours out of the guys that just visited, okay? Because we know that there's that normal onslaught during the visit. Hey, you know, Javion Hilson said some really nice things, the young man in Cocoa, Florida. And then, you know, we talked to Myron Charles out of Port Charlotte, Florida, et cetera, the defensive lineman. But I'm also interested in some of the other guys. Like, did you catch up with Josiah Sharma? Where's that sit right now? What about Caleb Chester, Michael Terry? Those guys, 48 hours later, after the shine of the initial glow of the official visit has worn off, I want to hear what you had to say about those guys, because that's where you really get a sense maybe of where things stand.
Yeah, so I think Texas feels like they got a real shot at Sharma. I the one thing with that recruitment that'll be interesting to me is, you know, he was a commitment to Washington. Kalen DeBoer, some of his guys on that staff that went with him to Alabama, whether it's in-house recruiting, whatnot, GM of their of football for them or whatnot, really believed in Sharma early on. So those, when you get down to it, and I think Texas is going through that with a Brandon Brown, right? Because Bo Davis believed in him when a lot of people said Bo Davis was recruiting him harder than Florida, Florida State, and Miami were, okay, in his own state, that were wondering, is this guy big enough? Is he tall enough? So with Sharma, if he decides he's not going to go with Kalen DeBoer, that is going to be a very difficult phone call for him to make, because they believed in him early on. So that's the thing you fight in recruiting. Once we get past the visits and you go back home and you sit down and you're like, you know, I really like this school, but that means I have to call Kalen DeBoer and those guys and tell them I'm not coming. And they recruited me from Washington. They came to Alabama and I've been their number one guy. Those are tough calls for a 17, 18-year-old kid to make. That's just a reality. So, you know, those are the parts of this recruiting process that we don't talk about enough. Probably we talk about the visits and the Lamborghinis and the photo shoots and all that. But when guys come back home, when you have to get back on the phone, that's when this recruiting process gets really tough. Because what happens when you get back? Alabama and Oregon call Josiah Sharma. Hey, Josiah, come up here. We're going to have a great visit weekend planned for you and Eugene this weekend. You don't want to miss this, this, and this. All right, Josiah. Yeah, Alabama, we've been with you the whole time, man. You come back down here and we're going to show you why this is the place for you. The kids, it's tough for kids to say no if they want to go a different direction. That is the tough thing in recruiting for all these kids. And I think Sark is they're in good position for a lot of guys. It's got to play out. As far as Caleb Chester, I spoke with him still as of Monday, still playing the visit at A&M and maybe Arkansas. Michael Terry, I don't think the nitty-gritty in that recruiting's really got going yet. He'll visit A&M this weekend, and I think that the nitty-gritty will be a key factor in that. So I don't think that's really gotten going yet. I look inside that camp, there's been some chatter. He may not make a decision till the fall. Do I say that's 100% happening? No, a lot of kids back off those timelines, right? But I will say this, Steve Sarkisian, that staff told Michael Terry, hey, look, if you want to wait till December to decide, we got a spot for you. They value him that much as an athlete.
Jerry, one of the things about him and Michael Terry is he had a previous relationship with Ronnie Wingo Sr., the dad did, and they reached out and talked the other day. You knew about that on Sunday. We hadn't mentioned that. Is that a sign that Michael Terry is trying to do his due diligence a little bit on Texas?
Yeah, I think people are going to overreact on the Texas side and think, oh, this is just – that's it. He's going to Texas. I'm not there. I don't think that's what that is. I think a mutual friend connected them to talk about the nitty gritty of recruiting.
Got it.
I don't think this is a call saying, hey, I'm coming to Texas. Great. My kid loves it at Texas. I think people are going to jump to that conclusion. I don't really think that's what that's about. Am I saying Michael Terry's not going to end up at Texas? I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is this recruitment hasn't truly begun yet, or hasn't as of Sunday night.
Got it. And Caleb Edwards is on to his official visit at Auburn. Then we have also Tanook Hines, a wide receiver out of Spring to Caney. He has been he's still expected to go to Notre Dame this weekend as well. Yes. If I forgot anybody in that group, please let me know.
No, Myron Charles at Miami this weekend, FSU that last weekend. You mentioned Caleb Edwards. The thing with Caleb Edwards' recruitment that'll be interesting is he going to peel off the West Coast? Oregon's the closest school to home for him when you live north of Sacramento, right? He visited UCLA. He's visited Washington. If he peels off the West Coast, I think Texas has a really good shot at him. And we'll have to see what plays out with the other tight ends as well.
Texas, this is a relatively deep year.
Oh, yeah.
Texas at tight end. I mean, not only do they have one commitment out of Amari Winston in the state of Georgia, Jerry, but they also have Keyote Armstrong out of Jasper. That's that bonus size tight end, real great blocker, big hand, big, you know, agile still, but a big guy. And then you also have Nick Townsend sitting out there, who you know they like as a receiver, kind of H-back type as well. Yeah. So I think
David Keith Williams. Look, I think four receivers is not out of the question in this class if it's the correct four. I mean, look, the reality is if it looks good for Texas with DeCorian Moore and Jamie French in a few weeks, and two of the three of Lockett, Kelshon, and Tanook Hines wants to jump in, Sark, it's going to be hard for Sark to say no to the guys that run 10-5, which would be a Kelshon or a Tanook Hines.
If they
followed Sark, he really doesn't say, nah, you go run that somewhere else.
Yeah, I was going to say, look, if they were to somehow get Tanook Hines, Kelshon Johnson, and DeCorian Moore, realize you probably have three guys running sub 10-5.
You don't pass
over 6 foot. Up. Hey, over 6 foot.
Yeah, you don't pass those guys up.
That's what I'm trying to say to you. And that's no offense to Jamie French, who, you know, phenomenal.
He reminds me of A.D. Mitchell. I'm not saying he's going to run 4.35 at the combine, but nobody thought A.D. was that fast coming out of high school either. Jamie French reminds me of A.D. Mitchell.
Those are big words.
Well, Jerry, something that has you running a 4.35 is Omaha Steaks.
Well, I can guarantee I ran a 4.35 to the freezer. I ran a 4.35 to the freezer to make that burger the other day, and I'm not close to being that fast. That was adrenaline. All right, guys, Father's Day is almost here. Are you struggling to find that perfect gift for the man that has everything? The solution is very simple. Give him the unforgettable experience of Omaha Steaks, because a world-class dad deserves a world-class steak. The Father's Day experts at Omaha Steaks have made it easy to put a smile on the big guy's face with hand-selected gift packages starting at just $99. And when you use promo code ONTEXAS, all caps at checkout, you'll get another $10 off your order. With Omaha Steaks, the possibilities are endless. Endless flavor, endless variety, and endless value. Truly, they have perfected more than steak, and your dad is absolutely guaranteed to love every bite. Pick from premium proteins like juicy pork chops, air-grilled chicken, and beefy burgers. Time's running out, guys. Don't wait until the last minute. Go to omahasteaks.com and order today with packages starting at $99. Don't forget, when you use promo code ONTEXAS, all caps at checkout, you'll get $10 off. Shop for unforgettable gifts that are guaranteed to make Dad's day. Because if there's one thing Omaha Steaks always knows, is that dads always want steak.
I'm getting some this weekend. I'm excited. I'm ready to grill and chill this weekend, Jerry.
Yep.
That's my role. That's my role, man. Hey, guys, we got a number of different things to talk about today. We also have something that I want to mention right now. Cole Pittman, I want to mention this. You know, it's a lot of people don't know about this that are younger Texas fans. But if you don't mind, go ahead and put that up on the screen for us. Cole Pittman has been a guy that lost his life, played for Texas for 2 years, freshman and sophomore, originally out of the city of Shreveport, Louisiana. Got killed in a one-car accident coming back home from Shreveport to Austin in 2001. I think it was February 27th was the date. And ever since then, several players have gotten together to do a memorial tournament and promote a scholarship fund for him. B.J. Johnson, Roy Williams, Sloan Thomas, those guys created a football camp and golf tournament to create a benefit for Cole Pittman and that scholarship fund. There are still slots available right now if you want to play in the golf tournament. That's this weekend. Coming up this Saturday, please feel free to do that and reach out to them. Use one of those codes there on the screen if you would. But reach out to the Cole Pittman Golf Tournament. One of the things I always remember about Cole, Jerry, talking about this, his dad, Mark Pittman, who will be at the event this weekend, by the way, always seemed like a guy's guy, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And he wrote a book about Cole and the situation that he and his family went through. That was still one of the more moving books you're going to read. Yeah. Just tremendous stuff. Cole, of course, still in our memories. And I just want to say thank you to Roy, Sloan, and BJ and others for keeping his memory alive and keeping this golf tournament going so many years later. I think I want to bring that up. If you're out in Austin, have a chance to play this weekend, see some former Texas players, a lot of them out there. Go out there and hang out with those guys. Todd Hunt, a friend of mine from back in that played at Texas from 88 to 92. He's organizing it as well as some other folks. So please, if you get a chance, think about going out there. I think it's at River Place this year.
No, absolutely. I mean, look, he was I covered that. I went to Evangel, covered his recruitment. Great, great dude, man. Always had a smile, kind of joking guy. Cole was awesome to deal with, and I, it was so interesting to me. One of my memories, lasting memories of Texas football forever, will be when they took a knee and didn't kick the extra point at 44 points. I think that is one of the lasting memories of Texas football for me. Since I've been covering recruiting and covering all this stuff, it was that moment. I believe that was against North Carolina, as it turned.
I was looking it up, Jerry. I was looking it up this morning because I knew I wanted to mention this golf tournament. It happened on September 8th, 2001.
Yep.
Just 3 days before 9/11, or 2 days before 9/11, really.
Yep.
44-14, Texas did that. But it was certainly – I was in the stadium that day, like you and like so many others probably on this chat or on this podcast. And frankly, it was a moving moment, one of the more moving moments in Texas football. Hope he's doing well up there. I'll just put it that way, to Cole Pittman and his family.
Hey, guys. Well, recently CBS put out an article talking about the top running back rooms in the nation. And I'm not going to put up the whole thing here, but I am going to put up the Texas part here in just a second. But Texas in the top five, Ohio State number one, number two is Georgia, number three, Kansas, number four, Texas, and number five, UCF. Honorable mentions were Miami, Penn State, Kansas State, Ole Miss, and Oregon. But Texas, with that number four ranking, CBS thinks they are going to have a big year and a loaded running back room. Want to get y'all's thoughts on that.
I think it's a little high, is my initial thought. I mean, because until either until Cedric Baxter or Jaden Blue prove that they are a true 1A running back, I would think that there's going to be five individual running backs better than them. Therefore, there would be five better running back rooms. So I think it may be a little high. That being said, the way Sark uses his running backs, it could manage that, make that a little bit different from that standpoint. But that seems a little high to me. Ohio State is ridiculous.
Yeah.
Right now. I mean, they not only do they have Travion Henderson coming back, who's the number one running back in his class, but then got injured. Then you have Keyshawn Judkins, the guy that was just phenomenal at Ole Miss as a freshman, transferring in. Someone mentioned Penn State. They've got two guys.
Penn State would be my number two. I would have Ohio State, Penn State. I think Georgia's too high at two on that list. I mean, look, they lost both their guys to the run. Travis Etienne comes in from Florida, but he was the number two back at Florida to Montrell Johnson, who's very good, by the way. We've had some of those questions. We'll get into more of that stuff here coming up as we get closer to the season, especially a lot in July. But, Bobby, yeah, I think Penn State would have been two on my list. I don't really get that one. With Texas, I actually would have – this maybe I'm a homer. I'd probably have Texas ahead of Georgia right now just because, let's see, Branson Robinson's coming off a torn patella tendon. That's a serious injury for a running back. And then they do have Reggie Robinson. But I might would have Texas ahead of Georgia until I see what Branson Robinson looks like coming off the injury. Because that's a major injury for a running back. That is not just the normal injury, okay? Especially where you get hit, especially the plant and cut of that. That's a big injury. I think Texas versatility at running back may push them to five if I was doing a list. But to your point, Bobby, Jaden Blue's never touched the ball more than 10 times in a game. And a lot of people say, well, Jonathan Brooks hadn't last year either. It's a little different. I mean, he had Bijan in front of him, right? But and Roshan. But Jaden Blue has never touched it more than 10 times in a game. Cedric Baxter had a lot of nicks last year, right? If those guys, if Cedric Baxter's healthy this year with more armor, as Rod Baber says, looked really good in the spring game, all of it. And Jaden Blue becomes a guy that could be counted on for 17 touches a game, which that's and stays healthy through all that. I think he's going to be dynamite in the passing game. I think their versatility could push him up there as the season moves along. Somebody said no Michigan, no Oklahoma State with Ollie Gordon. It's just I think that's a depth thing. We'll see.
I want to go back because this does tie in a little bit to the report I put up on Texas football this morning, Jerry, about some of the things I was hearing behind the scenes. Baxter and Blue are pushing one another. And part of that is a guy like Trey Wisner's not letting either one of them rest.
Yeah.
You know, he's amping up. I was the quote was he's amping up the he basically said he's amping it up, you know, that whole room. And then you have guys like Jarrett Gibson and Christian Clark behind him. And I just feel like the running back room as a whole, 1 to 5, is as good as any in the country. I have no doubt about that. I wonder if they have that superstar running back that actually would put them in the top five. Now, maybe they do have that in Jaden Blue in the passing game. I would admit that of all the running backs in the country, if you're talking about in the passing game, I would put Jaden Blue in the top five. I wouldn't necessarily make him or Cedric Baxter in the top five as runners. You know, like to the point someone was making in the chat, you would definitely put Ollie Gordon in that list of top five runners right out of Oklahoma State. So is it the – you mentioned versatility. I think it's the sum of all the parts and how Sark may use them. He'll use Baxter on the inside zone. He'll use Blue in the passing game. He'll use Wisner in the boutique role, maybe that they used Keelan Robinson in, right?
Yeah.
And so I think it's how all the pieces fit, I guess is what I'm saying. It's a jigsaw puzzle. And I don't think Texas doesn't have the knockout punch guy right now as a running back. Now, they may have it in the receiving game with Blue because he is just electric with his speed.
And one of the thing of note before we move on to some questions here. PFF also put this graphic up in Texas, most at the top here, most Doak Walker Award winners by school, Texas and Wisconsin tied at 5. My question to y'all is, who do you think takes the lead first?
Woo!
Texas at 5, Wisconsin. Let's read that out for the people listening on podcast or can't see this. Texas at 5 and Wisconsin at 5. Alabama at 3. Arkansas at 2. Iowa 2. Stanford 2. Texas Tech 2.
I'll tell you this. Texas Tech has a shot to go to 3 this year with Taj Brooks. People have mentioned him in the chat. He's going to have a big year in the Big 12 without Texas and OU there, by the way. He should have a pretty big year in the Big 12. Could Texas Tech get the 3 this year? Not out of the question. But you look at that. Who gets the 6 first? Wow, that's a good question. By the way, who can name all of Wisconsin's 5 without going to Wikipedia? That's a question for the chat.
Ron Dayne, Melvin Gordon.
Jonathan Taylor.
Jonathan Taylor for sure. Who can name all the Texas ones?
Yeah.
Yeah. That would be a tough one too now. It's got to be Jamal, Earl, Ricky.
Bijan and Dante Foreman.
Yep. Bijan, there we go. Hey, we got him quick. Did you fill that in for me or somebody write that down somewhere and you read it, Jared?
No, I stumbled upon it.
You're beating me in trivia again, Jerry Hamilton. That's not fair. That's
why y'all are making me host. And by the way, David Keith Williams said, yes, Jonathan Brooks would have made it 6 last year if he didn't get hurt. I think that was a done deal.
Very true.
Oh, sorry. It was not Jamal Charles. It was Cedric Benson.
Oh.
All right. I don't think there was even a Doak when Earl came out? I don't think there was.
I think there was.
When did Doak begin?
I think there was.
Oh, somebody said Monty Ball, Wisconsin. Good job.
I think there was a Doak Walker back then. We'll go check it out.
Established in 1990.
Oh, no, there was not.
So Ricky won it twice, as people are saying in the chat.
Yeah, Ricky twice.
Cedric, Benson, Foreman, Bijan.
Yep, you are correct. Well, we have a couple of super chats that we need to knock out. Jack, thank you, Jack, as always. He says, here's for Bobby's 100K kegger fund.
Hey, we are going to have a kegger. We may have one for this football season, by the way. I've got some plans for tailgating that we'll reveal later, but everybody's going to be invited. I hope everybody can make it out to football games this fall.
And our other one is from UT Boy. Thank you, UT Boy. He says, number 44. Okay. So thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you.
All right. Well, plenty of time, a little time, I guess. I shouldn't say plenty of time, but a little time to get your questions in. We'll get to as many as we can here, fellas. And let's start with this one from King Me. 3 teams the Longhorns would love to see kicked out of the SEC.
Look, this is the easiest question ever. A&M, Arkansas, and Oklahoma.
I'd probably put Vandy in there instead of Arkansas. Or I don't know that I don't want Oklahoma and A&M out. Huh. I want to play them every year.
Oh, I do too. I'm just saying
go get somebody else out. I mean, I want to play. Here's my take on it. I want to play those guys.
Oh, I do. I do too. Don't get me wrong.
I think that's part of the fun of what we do. And when you go to the water cooler at work, or you go talk to your neighbor and he's flying his Aggie flag on, you know, and you beat his butt. It's fun.
Now you still play him if you could play A&M and Oklahoma if they weren't in the SEC, you'd take it though.
Yeah, it didn't work out so much with A&M.
Nah.
So I mean, I agree. I want to play those guys. So I mean, who would you knock out? I don't know. I mean, I don't know.
Who would you really, if you took out the rivalry part of it, who would you want to kick out of the SEC? I mean, I don't know about that.
Vanderbilt, unless you want a free win. And everybody wants one of those every so often, right? So you don't really want to kick them out.
Nah.
Look, the SEC's got good schools. You know, I mean, overall, they've got good programs with a lot of fans that make it fun.
Obviously, Texas doesn't have the Mississippi State, maybe, but they've been in the conference from the outset. So,
I mean, the only reason Mississippi State would get votes is the cowbells are annoying if you go to a game there.
There's the one. Hey, wait a minute. Ben G just put one up that I want to say. Missouri. Like that. Are they really in the Southeastern Conference? They should be in the Big 12, or they should be in the Big 12 or the Big 10, in my opinion.
Yeah. All right. This next question, fellas, is going to come from Deep Smalley. And he says, one defensive starter we don't hear much on is Ethan Burke, steady performer, workmanlike, but I can see a big year from him. Any word on his development behind the scenes? And what are the expectations from the staff?
Well, right now, I mean, I hear plenty about Ethan Burke. The question that we have is, I've actually heard that they're trying to move Ethan Burke and not move, excuse me, is the wrong word, cross-train Ethan Burke at Jack as well as at Buck. So last year he played Buck. He was the boundary guy for Texas. Easier pass rush, less responsibility, was able to get in, had shorter coverage responsibilities. When he dropped, and they're trying to cross train him a little bit at Jack this year in pass rushing situations, so they can get Trey Moore and or Colin Simmons or even Colton Vosick on the field with him, right? And so I've heard plenty of positive things. I think he's still moving in a great direction. And frankly, Jerry, we talk about this all the time. He's one of the few guys on the Texas roster that have some natural pass rush ability. Yeah. Now there's more now. He was one of the few that last year had it, right? And one of the reasons why he was started over Justice Finkley, by the way, was his ability to get after the passer. So I don't think there's, I'm not sleeping on him. The question I have is, where does Trey Moore fit? Where does Colin Simmons fit? Where does Vosick fit? Along with Sorrell and Burke. That we talked about strengths and weaknesses on this program of the team in 2024. Yep. There's no doubt that defensive end is one of those, and Ethan Burke is one of the reasons why. So I don't want to sleep. I don't want people to think we're sleeping on him or anything like
that. No. I mean, I think he's a future NFL draft pick, and he could elevate himself with a ascending year from year two to year three. I don't think there's any doubt about it. I still think from a physical development, he's still 2-3 years away from even coming close to maximizing that frame. I think that'll Jay Lee asked a question at the beginning of the chat, and I actually started, we just hadn't brought it up yet. If CDC gets his buddy A&M coach at Texas, that'd be a change. Could that hire change things for Texas and Jonah Williams? I think my thing with Jonah Williams is, and there's a few other star questions I'm going to get to, is how many guys have been really truly successful playing baseball and football at the highest levels of college?
No.
I mean, how many guys? I mean, you know, when guys are talking about the MLB draft, how valuable are they to some college programs? I just think that's something interesting to follow with that recruitment. Well, I think Williams is a tremendous football prospect, but is he a football prospect or is he a baseball prospect in his mind? Because that's going to tell a lot of the story on his football future.
Well, here's the answer to that, Jerry. There's been a couple in the Texas days, but most of them are back in the 60s and 70s. James Street played, he pitched no-hitter at Texas. Keith Moreland played football and baseball before going full-time baseball. Of course, nationally, you have guys like Deion Sanders and Bo Jackson, but those are freaky athletes.
Think about how many years we're having to go back on that. Yeah. When is the last legitimate guy that was really good at both in college? I mean, that's the hard thing there, is because of the demands of football now. I mean, think about this. If you come on, it's a year. Football's year round in college now. It didn't used to be year round in college. Now it is. So, where are you if you're at Texas and you're recruiting top five recruiting class level classes, and you have a guy that's in football, but he's going to miss spring because of baseball, and then in the summer he may go play in the Cape Cod League? Is that kind of where you want to be? Is that who you're going to put a scholarship towards? I just think there's a tough decision to be made there.
Hey, and here's the other piece that has to be thrown in. Okay. So Ricky Williams played minor league baseball. So that there were some guys that tried to do that in the spring/summer that actually worked out. And not many ended up in the NFL or in the Major League Baseball, I should say. But it's worth noting. The thing that changes now is, what about NIL?
That's right. You have all these.
Double dip and do NIL, get NIL from college, and then go play pro baseball in the summer and get money from maybe.
But Bobby, that also goes to why football's year round now. I mean, you have your NIL. You have the things you go do in the community and all this stuff around NIL. Do you truly have time to be a two-sport athlete in college anymore and be successful at both and put in the time for both? I think it's more difficult now than ever. I want a couple other questions I was going to hit on. Dustin White, he asked, I put some my rankings of the wide receivers Texas is recruiting on TexasFootball.com yesterday. He asked about Dallas Wilson. Didn't make it in for the unofficial. Canceled that last minute. That was a bummer. Texas wanted him on campus. He's a stud. I mean, Dallas Wilson, you know, there's people in Florida, in the state of Florida, whether they're high school coaches you talk to, people we know in the industry that we've known for years, they're not sure if Jamie French or Dallas Wilson's the number one receiver in that state. That's how good Dallas Wilson is, because you know Jamie French is really good. So, yeah, Dallas Wilson's a big-time guy. I had him in my top three of all the guys, Texas. I think he's tremendous. But we'll see what happens. Oregon commitment. He's going to Florida this weekend, Oregon next weekend. But he says his recruitment's going to go to the fall. He tentatively has FSU scheduled for the rivalry game against Florida. We'll see on that. But Steve Sarkisian, they kind of hang around the rim. So not a name we're just going to pass off and forget about, depending on what happens with all these receivers. Daniel Denny said KJ Lacy's a stud. He's an Auburn fan there. KJ Lacy, by the way, I brought that up because Elite 11 finals is beginning on June 18th through the 20th, that is. So right before KJ Lacy makes his official visit to Texas, he'll be out in California with the Elite 11 finals. There's a couple other questions I was going to get to here while I'm looking at it. Okay, we had we brought up this. Okay, here's one. This is one I want to bring up. Do we have a good shot at Nick Brooks? By my count, this will be his third visit to Austin. He's talking about the offensive lineman from Cedar Rapids, JFK High. This will be his second visit. His first visit was a spring game. I think Texas has a legit shot at Nick Brooks, the four-star offensive lineman out of Iowa. I think it's Texas or Georgia. And I think Georgia's had a pretty big lead. The question there with Georgia is 11 offensive linemen signed in the last two classes. You saw that affected Texas a little bit in the last class after signing 12. Does Georgia get as many of those A1 guys in this class after signing 11 guys in the two classes previous?
All right. We got another question here. And I've actually seen this asked a few times since we've been doing this, but I want to go ahead and read it so everybody knows. JUT19 says, weird question here, but how do you boys get paid? Just trying to support any way I can for all the content you guys give us. Wouldn't be as up to date with the team without you guys. Bobby?
This is a great question that I struggle with daily, by the way. Several different ways, whether it's through advertising on podcasts or YouTube. We also, obviously, the super chats are really nice of you guys. We have a website that we promote a lot, and that is for people that are really into it and want up-to-the-minute information on all the team. It's $39.95 annually. If you use the code OTFOG at checkout, you have to make sure you use the code OTFOG, and it's just $39.95. That's $20 off the regular subscription price. I appreciate the kind offer or the question, JM. It's really nice of you. Look, we're here, and you guys support us how you see fit. I think that's where Jerry and I, when we started this, kind of came out on it. Support us where you can. And where you see fit, we're here to deliver the news however we can get it to you.
Good question here. I thought you I think you started this one up, Blake. Will Sark ever land the number one ranked class? I think a lot goes into that now. And if you look at the number one class, you're generally talking 5-6 5 stars and 27, 28 signees, because people calculate these classes in different ways in the industry. Some people just look at the class as a whole, which I still think is the best way to do it. But a lot of people have it based on your top 19 commits or 20 commits or 17 commits, or, you know, take away the highest, lowest, however the formulas come out. I'm always going to look at it as the whole, because the whole matters. I think the question there is, Sark went, 10 deep in the portal this year? I just wonder, Bobby, if Texas will ever have that level high school class as far as numbers go. I think there's going to be more of a balance than I thought 2 years ago with high school recruiting. The development, it's key. You're going to have 22, 23, 24, maybe 25, 26 signees on a heavy class. But is it ever going to go that 27, 28 number? If it does, it's probably going to have a couple of specialists in it, right? So we'll see on that. I'm not going to say no, but I think the way that Texas is working recruiting as a whole right now, I think, you know, if you have 30, I think they're going to have 31 to 33 spots after this year, counting seniors, early entries, portal guys. I think you're going to be looking at over a third of the roster, scholarship roster churn in one way or the other. But is that going to be 23 signees, 24 signees, and 9, 10 portal guys? That's probably the direction I lean right now. If that's the case, it's going to be tough to get to that number one class.
I think they eventually can get a number one class. The issue that I think Sark has a little bit in that, Jerry, is he likes to play it late and make sure he's getting the right guys. And so you don't necessarily get the momentum that some teams get early in the process that rack up some highly ranked players. So that's where I would say that maybe the way Sark recruits is more inclined to a top five class than necessarily a number one class, because he's willing to wait for the guys he wants. It's just a little bit different. I know it almost is counterintuitive to say it that way, but a lot of these schools, like Ohio State, for example, they make hay early and try to get people on runs and get guys done like that. And it works for them. It works for them. So I'm not saying it's wrong. And it works for Sark the way he does it.
Just two different ways. Yeah, and basically there's two things with that. One, Horn 7, Michigan didn't need it for a natty. They had two top 10 classes, maybe one really good one. But that's a big player development program, huge scouting program. But big player development program, I think that's where kind of Sark is headed. But I think they're going to recruit at a higher level consistently than Michigan did. Somebody brought up this, Patrick Page. What was that? Okay, sorry, we're getting all the questions, so I'm bringing up the wrong thing. Hold on. It was Ivory Martin. With Alabama and Georgia racking in commits, that's pushed the pace for Texas and other SEC schools. I think that kind of goes to what Bobby was saying. Like, if you look at Georgia, they tend – now, and Georgia is on top of college football, so there's a little bit of a difference right now, right? I know people want to think of Texas as Georgia right now, but they're still not where Georgia is, okay? Georgia has been doing it for multiple years under Kirby, won two national titles. What are they, won 53 or 54 games? I don't even know. Have 10-plus guys drafted every single year. Maybe had the most in a draft, them or LSU. But so they're on a different level than everybody right now. But Kirby also attacks official visits early. If you look at official visits, boom, May 31st, June 2nd. Huge weekend for Georgia. They go early. Sark goes late, to kind of what your point is, Bobby. They get a few more guys in the boat, try to build that thing a little quicker.
So before we move on to these final couple of questions here, Bobby, can you tell folks out there about Texas electricity ratings?
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, guys, for anyone shopping for electricity in the deregulated areas of Texas, TexasElectricityRatings.com is the best place to find a great electricity plan for your household. For starters, it filters out the dangerous and gimmicky plans from providers that are all hat and no cattle when it comes to your monthly bill. You can shop by rate, but also by an average bill feature that actually takes into account seasonal usage. That's important with summer coming up, to give you a real number and not some placeholder. So if you're looking for a new electricity plan, check out TexasElectricityRatings.com /OTF for the best options available. Hook them. Thank you to Texas Electricity Ratings for sponsoring Tuesday morning's Coffee and Football.
All right, guys, as I said, time for a couple of questions here before we get out of here. And Derek says, who's moving the corner? There's no way we are rolling with only Manny, Holmes, and Cole, especially with how small Cole and Holmes are listed.
Well, don't forget, you got Warren Roberson there too. Okay, and then you also have Kobe Black potentially, as well as Wardell Mack at corner. Santana Wilson's in town now as well. So you actually have seven corners on the roster, if I'm not – I think that's right.
I do think they need one of these young bucks to really step up. They need somebody to really step up here in August camp. And that could be a Santana Wilson. It could be Warren Roberson. It could be Kobe Black, a little more comfortable, body reshaped as he continues to get stronger. But they do need one of those guys to step up. There's also the possibility of playing Jahdae Barron out there a little bit as well. So, but I agree, depth-wise, that depth-wise, Texas does need somebody else to step up. Casey has the answer here. Jeff Smarzula was that's the last one anybody's brought up in the chat that was a really good football and baseball player. I can't remember the year. What year was that? Was that around 2013? So we go back. We're going back a decade now. I mean, that's how rare that is. That's kind of the point we're talking about, is that's how rare that is that somebody actually pulls it off and is successful at both. Now, the question is, nowadays with NIL and everything that comes with it, could you still? I don't know. I mean, it's things have changed in the last decade. I mean, this is football is a full-time year-round sport, more so now than it was 3 years ago because of NIL and all those additional almost two decades for Smarzula. So, I mean, that's how far back we're having to go. So, hey, look, if Jonah Wilson pulls it off, tip of the cap to you. But it hadn't been done in a while.
All right, our final question for today, fellas, is from Q Snipes. What three players have to play the best this year Texas to reach their maximum potential?
That's a great way to end the show. Hell of a question.
Yeah, it is. Quinn Ewers. I don't know about maximum potential, but he's unquestionably one. I would say after that, Trey Moore.
Yep.
It's a weird one. And then I'm going to go with maybe this is going to be a weird one. I'm going to say Cam Williams.
I don't disagree.
Because I think you know what you get out of Kelvin Banks. But if Trey Moore has 8 to 9 sacks instead of 14 and a half playing in a lesser league, that's big. If Cam Williams is as good or better than Christian Jones, then that offense is better than it was a year ago. Anthony Hill, I think, is already going to be there. Some people are mentioning him. Blue, Lole, a couple other guys. There's a lot of different ways you could go with that question. I think one of my pieces is wins above replacement theory. And, you talk about that in baseball where what's this shortstop worth the second shortstop? Well, I don't think you can do that at quarterback. You got to have your first string quarterback maximized. But at other positions, I think it's wins above replacement. And I do think that right tackle right now is one of those. And then I think that Moore's gonna be that guy.
I'm gonna throw a curveball at it. I agree with the first two, Quinn, Trey Moore. I'm gonna go Amari Nye Black. Think back to the Oklahoma game with Jatavion Sanders limping around. How much that changed what Sark does. I mean, Rod Babers talks about it all the time, how important that position is for unlocking fully the potential of Sark's offense. If Amari Nyblack builds off of what he's done his first 2 years, and that's not a slide on Gunnar Helm. Gunnar Helm is a very good player, but Nyblack is a different dude running down a football field and catching the football. If Sark maximizes him, and he maximizes what he can do in this season, I think that may make Texas extremely, extremely difficult to deal with. Somebody brought up the great one. I mean, geez, I'm an idiot, guys. I'll admit when I'm a dumbass. Kyler Murray is the last guy that pulled off. Now, and the interesting thing there is he walked away from the pro part of that to focus on college quarterback part of that, and actually had to pay back his signing bonus part of it. But he did play football and baseball at Oklahoma.
There you go.
And he may be the best pure athlete I've ever seen.
Is that Oklahoma running back commit or signee Taylor Tatum going to try to play both in college, or do we know? Or I guess he might even get drafted, right?
Yeah, I don't. Yeah, I think we're going to find out. Was that next week?
Yeah, that's the running back from Longview.
Sign with. But yeah, Kyler Murray's definitely the last guy that pulled it off. And again, hey, if Jonah Williams does it, now the question I have now is, with NIL, would Kyler have even done it? Would he have even played baseball? My knowing that recruitment and family pretty well, my answer is no.
Well, he ended up choosing football over baseball.
Yeah.
So if he would have, he had that opportunity to make that choice early and made it.
Oh, Ski Breck said he said Kyler Murray. I didn't see that in the chat. So, yeah, I think Kyler would have – look, I mean, there were some people in his family that wanted him to go pro baseball instead of football from a longevity standpoint, but he just loved football. So I think with NIL now, with what Kyler Murray would have commanded in NIL, he would have walked away from baseball.
Okay, guys, well, that's going to do it for today's episode of Coffee and Football. We want to thank Texas Electricity Ratings, along with Omaha Steaks, for sponsoring today's show. Thank you all for tuning in, for your continuous support. We couldn't do it without y'all. Be sure to head on over to ontexasfootball.com. As Bobby said, you can use promo code OTFOG. You get a full year for $39.95 if you use the promo code. And just remember, we can't be on here 24/7, so that's the best way to get that information. Jerry, CJ, Bobby, everybody just constantly bringing it on there. I promise you don't want to miss out on that. And if you haven't already, please hit that like and subscribe button. We would appreciate that. Ring the bell so you're notified anytime we do get on here and go live, or that we post a video. So for Bobby Burton and Jerry Hamilton, I'm Blake Monroe, and we'll see you tomorrow morning.
Hook 'em, guys.